This week's episode is brought to you by Blue Harvest Vintage. Are you a collector? Blue Harvest love to help you find that missing piece you need to complete your collection. They have extensive stock of vintage Star Wars vehicles and mint on card action figures, as well as new The Force Awakens and Black Series items. Blue Harvest have Funko Pops, Lego, Dinky, Corgi, Matchbox and more. Everything a collector could possibly need. If they don't stock it, then let them know, and their knowledgeable staff will be only too pleased to help. Head to Morley Market in Leeds to see the life-size Darth Vader. Alternatively, reach out to Blue Harvest on Twitter, at Blue Harvest UK, Facebook, Blue Harvest Vintage Collectibles, a website, blueharvestvintage.co.uk, or email at blueharvesttoys@gmail.com.
Talk Star Wars is a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Follow at SW Commonwealth on Twitter and take your first steps into a larger world.
This is Talk Star Wars.
The official podcast at talkstarwars.co.uk.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Talk Star Wars Take 3. I'm Mark.
I'm Stephen.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Paul.
Yeah, we got it.
We're back. We're all back together. I don't know when the last time was we were all back together, but here we are.
52 part 2.
Yeah, this is going to be our... It was, wasn't it, actually? Yeah. This is going to be our Rogue One reaction podcast. So there won't be the traditional structure to this episode, but we will just call out our sponsor with a quick reminder that Blue Harvest are offering you 10% discount on anything you go and purchase from them, as long as you tell them Talk Star Wars sent you. Go and treat yourself to some Rogue One toys. You can find them at facebook.com/Blue Harvest Vintage Collectibles or on Twitter. They are at Blue Harvest. We thank them greatly for their support. Gentlemen, it was Rogue One week.
It certainly was.
So we all got to see it this week, didn't we? Because we know you two, Paul and Steve, you went to see it when we were busy recording with Anthony Bresnikan.
Yeah, what's that all about?
Well, yeah. Anthony's the lead writer at Entertainment Weekly, and he's been doing such sterling work on Star Wars that we just felt we needed to talk to him. So we got him on for an hour or so the other night, and that podcast will be out on Thursday.
It was a podcast. So took that as an opening for you to explain who Anthony Bresnikan was and everything else. I was actually being bitter.
I know, but
yeah,
I rose above it.
Just deflected it effortlessly, yeah.
Yeah. Right, we let him off, wouldn't we, Paul?
We've had a couple of people sort of almost immediately asking where the Talk Star Wars Rogue One review was.
There
was
a couple
of comments on Facebook, and I got this wonderful tweet. I woke up to this wonderful tweet the other day from a podcaster called Daddy Unscripted on Twitter.
He said,
two of my first thoughts after leaving Rogue One tonight. One, I may need a change of pants. And two, I can't wait for the next Talk Star Wars episode.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah. Check that out.
It's nice that that's the first
That's really
thought.
Lovely.
It's interesting they waited 18 months for the film and they can't wait 18 hours for the podcast. <isn't it?
laughs> Just saying.
But it's very flattering.
It's very cool. Thank you very much. It's nice to be up there on your list with new underpants.
Nice to be wanted. Yeah,
Christmas is coming. You'll be fine, yeah.
Yeah, just make the ones you got last till Christmas and you'll get some
big
new ones,
Rogue
guaranteed.
One pants. Big Death
It's only the stub and understains that hold my pants together.
You don't even wear pants.
It's your small thermal exhaust port, Steve. This is going to be a bit... This is going to be a bit freeform, I think, because...
Freeform,
like now, The Force Awakens review last year. It's much better for us if we just get to go where we want to go. So with that in mind, spoiler alert, from the very start, we are going to be talking about stuff you probably want to avoid if you haven't seen the film yet, and then come back and join us as we take this thing apart. So initial reactions, gentlemen. Stephen, let's start with you. Initial reaction to Rogue One.
Okay. At the end or during the whole thing?
Both.
Well, I started off, obviously, I thought, I wonder if they'll do an open call. They didn't. Not the end of the world. They started it in space, so I was quite pleased with that. As the film went through, it's easier to explain my disappointments rather than my loves, because overall, I thought it was amazing. And I don't say that lightly, because I am not a Star Wars fan per se. I love Star Wars, but I have other franchises that I prefer, as you all know. Mm-hmm. But I absolutely loved it. The downsides for me, there were a couple of things, literally a couple of things, that all I could think. The music may grow on me, but it wasn't hammered home like it is in Star Wars. It didn't feel, but I didn't think about it during the movie. It's only afterwards I thought, oh, was the music any good? And I couldn't remember. That's why I thought it probably wasn't.
Right.
But it was still good, but not what we're used to. But it's really a minor thing that the last scene, I will say something good, the space battle scene was the best I've seen in Star Wars.
Yes, it really was good.
Honestly, I just wanted to see the film again and fast forward it to that last three quarters of an hour. I just loved it. I couldn't get enough of that. I want to see it again just so I can check out all the nuances of all the ships and when they're crashing into each other and the space gate. Like Paul, I won't mention, but Paul mentioned the shield bit and how the ships crashed on it. I loved all that. I thought it was fantastic. The only thing I'd like to have seen is where that Star Destroyer went as it was heading down. I would love to have seen that crashed into the planet. But anyway, again, so what? The only gripe I had, and I know this is contentious and I know you're not going to agree with
me.
I hated, I couldn't look at the screen when Tarkin was on because I was embarrassed how bad the CGI. It wasn't that the CGI was bad. It was only 90% good. That was my problem.
Let's stick a pin in that, Steve, because that's going to be one of the chief things that we talk about, I think. So it's good to hear that from you, that was your initial reaction to it. But we'll circle back around to that and we'll talk about that a little bit more in depth.
Cool in the gang.
Okay, Rob.
Hello.
Your initial reaction to the movie, mate.
It's hard to explain. I kind of came out of the film going, yeah, that's pretty good. And the more I thought about it since I went to see it, the more I find myself thinking back on it fondly and thinking that was amazing and I really saw something special.
We're in the same boat there, brother.
Oh, excellent. Okay. So the one thing I would say in general was it was bold. So much of it was just really bold filmmaking, really bold effects. Some of the stuff Steve just touched on I thought was incredibly brave. I don't necessarily swing with it on the same. We'll come to it, but I just thought the whole movie was bold and it was different and it was new and it was familiar enough that it was still tight. It still felt like Star Wars, and I loved every second of it. And I'm going to go see it multiple times at the cinema. It already occupies top half of my rankings, and it may creep up the list as I see it more.
Excellent, Paul. You are the one that I thought was
a wild card.
Yeah,
I'm always curious about.
Not worries
you so much.
You're the litmus test for this film.
Well,
for me.
I'm the one. I'm probably the one that was barking about this earliest with excitement, sort of thing. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying you guys weren't looking forward to it, but when the teaser reel that was at Comic Con, literally 4 seconds after that, I don't know if I saw that with you, Mark, but I think I looked up. I was like, that's some serious. This is what I want to be part of. Beg your pardon, excuse the French.
That's all right, I'll bleep.
And one thing that I will say, that with all my hopes and bits and pieces, I said I wanted to leave the cinema going, yeah. I didn't. I sat in my chair and I went, yes! sort of thing.
Wow, okay.
For me, kind of going back to what Rob just said as well, it's by far my favourite Star Wars film, period.
Really?
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I've been thinking about. I mean, I've been even looking at the web and looking. You know, we'll pin this, like you say, Mark. Look at the reshoot stuff and everything else. But the last 20 minutes was the most fun I'd had in the cinema for years and years and years.
The last act is sublime.
What Steve just said, the last. Yeah, it was. I was floored.
Yeah,
I was. I was panicking, wet myself, to be honest. I absolutely loved it. I can't express how much.
Wonderful.
I cannot express. Yeah. Empire's got that sort of deep romance for all of us, because Empire, you know, gave us all a massive punch in the chest when it came out. It's like, whoa, didn't think they could top Star Wars. But the last 20 minutes of that were the most fun I've had in such a long time at the cinema.
That's high praise. That is the highest praise I think anyone could level at this movie. Just to my quick reaction, my first viewing of it, I came out thinking that's close to perfect. I think, Steve, I sent you a message saying that was 98% a perfect movie, because Steve was the only person that came to me and said, go on, give me something. I wouldn't volunteer that sort of information to anybody because I don't want to load them when they go in. And I contend to be somewhat hyperbolic about these things when I leave the theatre. But I thought that was 98% perfect. And I was bothered with certain things. Tarkin, another character that we're going to get to, I'm sure, from the close of the film. And there was a couple of other techniques they used in the film that we will get to in this episode that bugged me. And then on my second viewing, sort of maybe 36 hours later, none of those things bothered me at all. And I fell deeply in love with this film. Not to the point where it's going to push A New Hope and Empire out of the way, but it's right there at number 3 in my rankings.
Okay.
Exactly the same thing, Mark. Better than Force Awakens.
Oh, yes, big time.
Now, this is I'm not going to be that cavalier about the way I feel about The Force Awakens, because that's still, to me, a really special film.
And oh, sure, yeah.
And it was, if it is flawed, I think the flaws from The Force Awakens helped make this film more robust, because it gave them a platform to look at the movie and make their decisions about what they were going to do. I'm sure that's what these reshoots were about, what they were going to do to make this right. I just sent Paul sent a message in.
Yeah, so right, yeah. Well,
that's the formula, Rogue One greater than TFA.
Yeah. That's maths.
Yeah, it is math. So that's proof then, isn't it? If it's been proven mathematically.
This is it.
Yeah, it was an absolutely stunning film, and I think it's benefited from the mistakes in inverted commas that The Force Awakens made. It gave them, Force Awakens gave them the experience they needed to look at this film objectively and rework it and throw a lot of stuff out, which I think is probably a good idea that we move straight onto that now. The stuff that was missing from the trailers. Steve, I know you mentioned before we went into this film that you were probably going to be distracted because you've seen so much footage. You're probably going to be distracted saying, that's a trailer shot, that's a trailer shot, that's a trailer shot. That didn't happen, mate, did it?
No.
Because most of the trailers are on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
But did that distract you?
The Jedi statue. A little bit. I mean, the Jedi statue, I thought, they reversed that shot.
Yeah, they changed the they changed the angle, but it was still there, wasn't it?
We had a close-up of the face from a horizontal angle, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Which actually was really cool.
That's amazing.
That was a really good... I'm sure we covered this on a podcast saying, wouldn't it be good if they made trailers that weren't in the film so that you never were distracted? And that looks like what they've done.
Reshoots or not, I think it was great that we didn't see all that stuff to some degree. And we can tell I hate the word, but that the reshoot aspect is there. Mm. We know that because of certain elements. But at the same time, if I'm going to get stuff in future that gives me a taster for the film that isn't necessarily there, brilliant, bring it on, no problem.
Yeah, totally.
As long as it does what this did, and I don't know whether it was intentional, but everything we saw in the trailer, it still communicated the tone that's in the film.
Exactly, proper. Yeah.
So it's not like the... Mm. It's not like the context of the movie has changed. It's not suddenly a children's film. It's still this bold, hard movie.
Shall I tell you what I loved, Mark?
Go for it.
And I've just realised it. It was perfect distraction from what really happened, because at the end of the film, I thought, right, well, she's going to get in a ship and go the forces with us and fly off. And that was in the trailer. Like, she's leaning out of a ship at one point, isn't she? Mm. In an open-sided ship. And I was trying to picture that. I can't remember in what trailer I saw it.
Okay.
And there was that ship at the end of the gantry that never was in there.
The TIE fighter, yeah.
Yep. The TIE fighter. I thought that's what she's going to get on that. Yeah. Or she's going to get away. And then, whoa, they're dead. It's like, oh, my God, that's awesome. Yeah. They've totally made me a different story that I couldn't put together from the trailers.
Mm-hmm. We did discuss some of this stuff, specifically the TIE fighters. We discussed with Anthony Bresnican the other day the reshoots and what motivated them. And specifically, we discussed the TIE fighter scene. So I won't spoil what's coming in that podcast, but there's some insightful comments in there about what drove them to make those changes. It's very interesting.
I've got an idea. I'm a million miles off the mark, but I've got an idea.
Go for it.
No, I won't go for it now.
No, throw it out there, Paul. Go on.
I thought that was going to be her heroic demise, basically.
Oh, okay.
But I think they decided, hang on a minute, we've got a tangible, it wasn't a love story, but we've got a tangible bonding here between these two.
Yeah.
And as much as I said, don't give me the Blackadder ending, the way those two sort of said goodbye in total triumph sort of thing, I thought was beyond beautiful. I mean, it was almost a watery eye moment. I thought that was just phenomenal. It was a little bit deep impact, you know, with the father and the daughter on the beach, sort of, but I didn't care. I actually, that's the point. I mean, I'm now being the TFA fanboy because I'm going to just sit here and say, I don't care. It was brilliant. I don't
care. And they didn't kiss. Thank God.
No, I know.
No, that's good. There was a point where it might have happened. And I thought, okay, well,
Happened in the lift. I was like, please, no, don't go there. And they didn't. So.
Yeah. I
thought the TIE fighter was her demise, actually.
It wouldn't have bothered me, I don't think, that much. But I think it was kind of, I think it's nice that they don't have to do that. You know, they can still tell the compelling story without doing that. I thought that was good.
Yeah, I agree with you completely.
But they weren't particularly friends, but they did have a mutual respect for each other. We know that. I mean, let's be honest, he had a different agenda, didn't he?
We'll get to that in a second. Yeah. The whole Jin thing, I'd written my spoiler review, which is up on the site, and one of the things I put in the end was that Jin's effect on the people around her was profound, and that will make her a lasting Star Wars hero, even though she's not going to be on screen again. I can't imagine a way that would work, but she had a profound effect
about this
on those
as well. What's and I said, point? if we talked about the fact that they're only in one film, but can they leave that mark? And I said, absolutely, if they're written correctly, if they've got the correct context applied to them, these guys will be as immortal as anybody else. And yeah, I mean, obviously it's the newest film and so on, but you're not going to forget those characters ever.
No,
you're not going to forget them, especially the new Laurel and Hardy. The names have gone. Beg your pardon.
Turin Bay.
They were wonderful. So yeah,
they were great. I have one point on that, but I think we'll come to it later.
On another note, I'm not sure 2-3 hours is going to be enough to talk about this, guys.
Well, let's just get to a couple of things. And Rob, you kind of alluded to the whole to Cassian and that scene in the alleyway, and the morally grey nature of the rebellion. Do you want to make a couple of comments on that, mate?
Yeah, I thought that was incredible. It speaks to that kind of bold approach, and I loved it. I thought it was awesome that, you know, they had this guy who was basically a bit of a git in some ways, and that, you know, they're kind of, it makes more sense. It just makes sense that the rebellion wouldn't just be, you know, pure and virtuous and everything, because they're going to have to resort to
can't make non-bit without breaking some eggs, can you?
Exactly. What's also good is I liked the fact that there were factions within the rebellion who were kind of opposing each other because of the methods. And it makes perfect sense that these things, like Saw's faction, were much more prone to violence and destruction than some of the others. And I thought that was great, because you would have that if it's kind of grassroots.
We went down the fundamentalist route a little bit more, didn't we?
Yeah, they even refer to him as an extremist, don't they?
Mm. Yeah, I love that. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, it was good. Because I was thinking for a second, has he just knocked that bloke out or stunned him or something?
Yeah.
Because you don't see it, do you?
Shot him in the side.
But he was basically weighing up that if he gets caught, it's probably all over.
Yeah, exactly. Because that guy knows where Yavin is and what the plans
are. He basically just went circle of life, bang.
Yeah.
Which I thought was awesome. I thought that was really cool.
I loved it, yeah.
I mean, how much was we were really worried that Disney were gonna dumb it down. Maybe it was darker, or maybe it was lighter.
Well, apparently it was much darker, wasn't it?
I think there was a bit too dark.
There's been some effort to tone down Jin, to make Jin less brash, less cocky, just by lifting elements out of the film. I don't think they had to do too much in terms of rewriting. But the impression I'm getting from what I'm reading online is that Jin was initially trying to work her way into the rebellion, trying to prove herself. And then that's been altered so that they have to bring her in to get to Galen. So at the time, Cassian was more of a recruiter and less of a spy. But in the version that we get, he's more of a spy. And then we see him committing those deeds, like in that scene in the alleyway. But I think I really like the juxtaposition of the boots on the ground rebellion doing these bloody deeds, and then you've got the Mon Mothma and a group of elitists who are these... They're almost cowardly, aren't they? When you see those other senators that say, no, this is enough, pull the plug on the alliance because it's just getting too heavy. But they're all there in their lovely robes. They're not seeing what's really going on. And I like that juxtaposition. That will be something that affects my viewing of A New Hope now that I know that there are these two sides to the rebel alliance.
Yeah.
So what do we make of K2SO?
He was great, wasn't he?
He was really cool, and what a way to go!
Yeah, well, that was the thing, wasn't it? Like Mark, you were saying like you were really hoping he was the one to sort of do the final delivery, as it were.
Yeah, I was really hoping that would happen. Yeah,
we got a really heroic finish, and it was superb.
It was heartbreaking, and especially Cassian's reaction.
Yeah, when he realised what happened.
Yeah,
it was awesome. I just thought it was brilliant.
In fact, I found that slightly more moving than Baze losing Chirrut the way he did.
Oh, I have issues with the way Chirrut went out. He went out far too easily and far too lightly for my liking.
But didn't a lot of them, Rob? Like the guy, the pilot, lot just suddenly chucked a nade in, done, boom, over, next.
I liked that
very
one.
I
liked
that happens in war.
That one made, you know, he was like, he'd just done this thing he needed to successfully do. And then it's like, oh, psych.
And that's true of all of them. Every one of these heroes that leaves, they complete their responsibilities to the narrative, to the story we're enjoying, but they complete their own personal objectives. And for Riz Ahmed's Bodhi Rook, who was a standout, Riz Ahmed, I've never seen him better, and I've seen him in some great stuff.
He was really good, yeah.
He was absolutely incredible. And I'm glad they gave him that arc of redemption. It's a deeply personal redemption that Galen had affected him in such a way that he knew he had to stand up and change. He needed to be heard. And once he'd completed that, he left the story. Major league sacrifices on display here. And that's true for all of these characters, even K2SO. Mm-hmm. Once he'd completed his... mission, which was his complete devotion to Cassian,
and
he left the story. That stuff is just devastating. It's heartbreaking in a way that Star Wars has never done. George's Star Wars would never have done that.
No,
we get the
I think they'll be
party.
Looking at this film when it's successful, which it's going to be. I think it's going to give Force Awakens a run for his money. I think they'll be looking at this film and going, you know what? Maybe this is the way we need to go.
Like, I hope so.
Like across the board, you know, make it dark, but so that children can still watch it, but adults can pick up on that darkness.
Well, that's the reason Empire is still everyone's favorite film, kind of, though, isn't it? We appreciated there can be a darker element allowed in, and it doesn't have to bring us down. It can actually bring out a different kind of a set of emotions from us that we naturally sort of tie towards. And a lot of people kind of like that. I can't quite describe it. It's like you're okay with an angry downer. Sort of situation because you're like, what's gonna happen next? What's gonna happen next? And all you see is Luke with his arm around Leia at the end. You're like, right, now they're kicking us off. So having that drop is absolutely fine because then you're anticipating, you know, Christ, what's coming next? And you have to wonder, I'm wondering if they might be doing some very minor rejigs with episode 8 already because they're like, there's a formula here that we can keep retapping. So fine, you know, bring it on.
That's a really important point, actually, Paul. And the way you reference Empire is really important because Rogue One scratches an itch Empire will never be able to address. And that is, and that's purely because Empire's stuck in Act Two. Because it's a part of the trilogy, it can't resolve anything. You can't sacrifice your main character, which we see in Rogue One. And you have to leave the story open. You can plunge into that darkness, which is a thing we all respond to because we all like that. That's why we like roller coasters, isn't it? That's because you know, we like that risk in a controlled environment. So we're watching our proxies on screen go through hell in Empire, but we don't get any resolution because it's stuck in Act Two, the middle part of the trilogy.
That's a good point.
With Rogue One, it's able to give us the darkness, and it rockets through Act Two, because it's, you know, at hyper speed, because it's racing to the to the third act conclusion, and that's what we get, and that's why we leave. Paul, that's probably why you've left so satisfied, is it because you've got to plunge into that darkness, see all the risks, see the cost. You see all these hats laid on the ground, and then we're iris out to the director credit, and that film is done. That, if anything, will inform a Star Wars stories going forward. It might not be able to affect Episode 8 so much, because that too is going to be stuck in Act 2 because it's the middle part of a trilogy.
Yeah.
So they may not be able to perform it and get away with it in the next, in our next Star Wars movie. But I'm very excited for these standalones now if they're all going to follow this template.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. We were talking about this on the way home. One of the reasons why this was such a powerful movie is because you knew how it was going to end it, and you knew out what happened before, and you, it was like a perfect jigsaw piece that slotted into it, and it completed the puzzle. But I'm not sure if they can do that again to that level with character. With something like a total standalone that's not only standalone in the actors that are playing the parts, but also the story. And I'm not sure they're going to be able to fit it in as well as this one did. I'll happily be proved wrong. I think this was like a perfect moment to get something like this together.
It's interesting, Steve, that you mention it as a jigsaw puzzle piece, because I saw a comment on a friend's social media that really summed it up for me. He said, if you think of the original trilogy like a hand, Rogue One is a perfectly fitting glove, because it ties everything together nicely and it all works.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not sure it all works.
Okay.
So can we just... Let's get into our own act two now and get into the dark stuff, because there are a few elements that left a bad taste in my mouth. And I'll run through them quickly, and then we can jump on them and tear them apart if you like.
Okay.
The lack of the opening crawl, I don't think that was necessary. I think they could have done it perfectly well, and the film still have an identity of its own. So removing the opening crawl just to give it its own identity was not necessary.
Okay.
I'm not sure I like the cold open and then that awful title card, and then we're back into the story proper. I thought that transition was incredibly clumsy. I missed the wipes. I'm not crazy about the locations in the lower left corner of the screen.
I think you needed those in the first act, because it was all over them. Because this is what we speculated, wasn't it? We said the reason they've got – there's rumours of title cards for locations, and we said that's probably because we're going to be jumping all over the place. And in the first act, we really were.
Really was breaking.
And I think without those, we'd have been going, what the hell?
But there were a couple
Where are
missing.
We now?
There were a couple missing.
There were,
and
that's
true. I don't know why. Like, they didn't title Lamu at the start, the first planet that we arrive on in the cold open.
Yeah. But that could be stylistic, couldn't it? Like, it's meant to be, you know, the ones that aren't on the – title cards are not common knowledge.
Possibly.
Sort of stuff that's kind of clandestine and hidden away.
But then you'd think Wabani, the Imperial prison planet, would be one that would qualify. We're only there for a heartbeat.
And did we not do that one? I thought we did that one.
Wabani was on screen, but...
I didn't have a title card.
It did have a title card.
Oh, I see.
But you would think when you look at Mustafar and Vader's castle, that wasn't titled.
No.
Yeah. So why the mystery? Because that's a prequel planet, we know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's bits like that. There's some of the CG work on the as I'm calling them, the reincarnated characters. And I had an issue. I don't have issues with this anymore, but with Red Leader and Gold Leader with the recycled footage.
Oh, I really like that.
Now, I didn't know that was recycled. They must have done it so well that I didn't see.
Yeah, I thought it called attention to itself, but...
I think
Go on, Rod. No, you go, mate.
I think what they did was they did a good job of framing the pilots in the new footage in such a way that when they inserted the old footage, it looked no different in terms of how they were laid out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was, you know, they didn't have a weird new setup in the cockpits, like new tech or anything. They just had the same layout. It looked exactly, you know, they looked identical from the outside. So it meant that when you did see the recycled footage, because it was only on screen for a blink and you'll miss it, it didn't feel wildly out of place.
No. And it was momentary. I think they did a lot better job of momentary glimpses of people that either were reworked or CGI than they did. Because I knew, as soon as I saw Peter Cushing for the first time, I knew he was going to be in it a lot. Because I thought, you know what? If he was going to be in it for 10 seconds, they would have spent the money needed to make it absolutely
perfect. Yeah.
And I knew that he was going to be in it a lot because they obviously had financial restrictions. Because, you know, we've spoken about this before. CGI is only as good as the budget.
Yeah.
And they should have spent. I know, but do you want to go on to Peter Cushing yet, Mark?
Yeah, let's do it. Like I said, let's follow this podcast where it goes, Steve. So let's talk about Cushing while we're on it.
Well, for me, I was totally involved in this film. You know, when you forget you're in a cinema, that's what it's all about, right? Mm. And the moment he came on and his mouth moved and he didn't move like a human, it was a little bit soft and deliberate. Humans don't move like that. His face was too dark. It was too it was obviously CGI. I was pulled completely out and I was like, Why didn't they spend a bit more money on it and get it right? We know they can do it. You've seen a young Robert Downey Jr. In Civil War. You've seen Michael Douglas in Ant-Man. They can do this stuff, but it takes money.
Yeah.
And it just pulled me completely out. And every time I saw it, I was embarrassed to look at the screen.
I have 2 points on that. I think you're right in that I did see moments where it was more obvious than others. One question I have is, do you think your reaction would be different if Peter Cushing wasn't dead? Sounds like a weird thing to say, but I wonder how much of it is the knowledge that it couldn't possibly be him.
No, not
whereas
at all.
with Leia, you know, you could have Carrie in that space and then overlay her with the CG stuff and she could still do all the sort of physical acting in the way she would have done it. Whereas with Peter Cushing,
I
don't really have
I never thought like, oh,
okay. It's just a curiosity I have because I wonder, that was something I wondered about in regards to my own interpretation.
I just thought he didn't look like a human. It wasn't really Peter Cushing. He didn't look like a person.
Well, we know, that's what I'm saying. We know that.
Look at someone move, they jerk. People don't move in soft, fluid motions. And the mouth, it just didn't work. And, you know, it's that uncanny valley thing again. Mm. I didn't think it was a human being. He reminded me of one of the Senate CGI characters. I can't remember which one in the prequels. I know it was a tall blue alien. It reminded me of that.
Okay.
It was unfinished.
We had this conversation the other evening, and I was quite surprised to hear that that many people are reacting the way you are, Steve. Because my reaction, even though I'll admit it pulled me out of the movie for just a second when he was on screen. I'm glad they introduced him with the reflection and they kind of gently eased him on. So if he'd have just rocked up, smash cut to Peter Cushing's face, I think I would have been pushed back. But because they teased it in the way they did, I was much more receptive to it. And I was just grinning from ear to ear. I thought, this is fantastic. That is actually Tarkin I'm seeing on screen. And the only thing that bothered me was his height a little bit, but the physical, the look of his face, that digital mask is the thing I've been calling it, this digital mask they put on, actually gave me a performance that I was consumed by. And even on the second viewing, when you should think that I would be even more critical with more time looking at it and less time concentrating on the story, I was more sold on it. And I didn't see the flaws that I might have pointed out in the first viewing. I was completely lost in it. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised it's getting the sort of criticism that it's getting. I appreciate it's not 100% there. I'm not sure we'll ever get 100% there.
No.
Well, we will. Because you've only got to get a timeline back from 20 years ago to 10 years ago to now. They're going to get there.
We're too well equipped to sort of take these things apart, Steve, especially with human faces. We're too clever. Sorry, Paul, I cut you off. What was you going
to
say, mate?
No, I was just going to say, in reaction to that, Steve, if you say we're going to get there, that means we're not there yet. Which, why are you expecting so much?
Well, because you can get there if you put the money in. And they've totally shown that, and even James Cameron has said it, that the more time you invest in a CGI character, the better it looks. They said, right, that's it. We can't keep going with this. That's as good as we're going to get. And you can keep going because we know they can do it. And it, you know, and maybe you're right to a degree. Maybe that was the limit that they could get. Maybe it wasn't Was it ILM?
Yes.
Yeah. Would have been,
not, maybe they're not as good. Always. Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe it's not as good as Peter Jackson's, the W word, the little insect, Weta. You know, they are the ones that are doing the best CGI faces, aren't they? Because we've seen them before.
Yeah, but they're stylized. They're hyper-stylized, though, Steve.
Yeah, that's...
You're not asked to register those as human... You're not asked to just accept them as actual people. And that's what they were asking us in this movie, to accept him as an actual person. And yeah, once
I would rather see an actor doing it. At this point, maybe we're not there with CGI.
It would have been an actor, I think, and then they probably would have overlaid the CGI on top.
Look at Mon Mothma. You weren't pulled out because she didn't look like the original.
Yeah, but
person.
You need somebody who looks identical to Peter Cushing in that
different,
case, because you've got it's about 20 minutes difference.
Yeah, very different responsibilities. That's why you couldn't get away with it with Leia. I really want to make a comment in a second about the four separate techniques they used to bring characters to life in this movie. But Paul, let's get your take on Tarkin.
Well, bizarrely, you're going to laugh at this. I was very, very, very anti-CGI, yes?
Yes, indeed, yeah.
And I can't tell you the smile that went across my face when I saw the reflection and then he turned around.
Really?
I'm the other side of the universe from Steve. I loved every single second of Tarkin. Like an eight-year-old boy, I was totally captivated.
Oh, that's awesome.
I didn't care. After about 3 seconds, I completely fell in love with what they did, and I wanted to see a lot more of him.
Yeah, the performance was staggering, wasn't it?
I thought it was beautiful.
I agree with you. I do. Well, I think the performance. A couple of points. I thought the voice was amazing.
Yes, like, very much
that,
so.
That was on the money.
That's Guy Henry, right? Superb.
Yeah.
Oh, was it Guy Henry?
I think it's Guy Henry. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was fantastic. But it was the other bit for me. Yeah. But I appreciate what Paul's saying. You know, it was a very good job. It was just that 10%, and that 10% is what matters.
See, my theory on this, Steve, is that I actually think that we will never truly get to 100%, because I see it as an exponential curve. So I see it as, you know, we're going to make these bold strides, and the closer and closer we get to photorealistic, the we're not going to quite get there, and it's going to become more and more obvious that we're not there as time goes on and technology gets better. I've seen this in, like, video games, and obviously they improve these graphics. And again, you can look back at 20 years ago and see this vast gulf in the quality of graphics that are possible, but they never truly get it.
And what would have worked? And you've made me think of something there, Rob.
All right.
I think whether you're right or wrong, I don't know. I hope not. I hope we do get there.
No, of course. Maybe and I'd love to be wrong.
Maybe the way we'll get there is by making it. It was because when you've got half and half, if the entire film was CGI and every character was CGI, you wouldn't notice it.
Yeah.
It's when you've got humans and then you pop to a CGI character, it's like, whoa. Even Leia, I thought, actually, you know what? For a 5-second view, they invested the money. She was 98% there.
Yeah, I noticed her more as CGI than Tarkin.
No, yeah. I didn't.
I found that more. It was the eyes that didn't. They just looked.
Yeah,
you know,
there were a couple of moments there where the mask slipped, and I think that perhaps it was the lack of performance in that shot.
Did they mocap her, Mark? Do you know?
It was a stand-in. It was a stand-in. A young lady whose name I'm not prepared with, unfortunately, so my apologies. But it was a young lady that was the stand-in, and then they did the digital mask that they used on Tarkin. To recreate Leia. And I do think that as she turns away to deliver that one word line, we get the uncanny valley. The eyes just move in a way that doesn't seem right. The depth within her eye sockets, it doesn't really quite work. I think we'll probably expect to see that worked on between now and the Blu-ray. That's what Anthony Bresnikan said to us the other night.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
He said, you know, the movie, the theatrical release is a deadline, but it doesn't mean that they down tools. We've still got the Blu-ray, and we've seen this before in Star Wars, that elements of the film get reworked and polished right up until that Blu-ray is pressed and released. So expect a revision. Or a development, I think.
Well, also, I'm not being funny. We've had two versions of The Force Awakens since it came out.
Yeah.
And with digital copies, you can always tweak it.
Indeed.
That would be good.
I just need to point out the other techniques that were used in this film to bring characters back to life shows that the filmmakers were they were very conscious of the fact that they were putting their money on the Tarkin effect for this film, because he had to carry quite a lot of story. But they did bring back other characters. So we saw Dr. Evazan and Ponda Baba on Jeddah.
I wasn't a fan.
So you got a recast of those two characters in new makeup, and it was a joke. It was a throwaway gag on screen, but to me, I think that worked.
I agree to a point. It didn't bother me in terms of it didn't pull me out of the film or anything, but I did feel like Evazan was a bit looked a bit young.
Yeah, I thought that
ever so slightly. And it's just considering, it's not that far in front of Star Wars, is it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like a couple of weeks in it. Maybe it was
a very nonplussed moment, to be honest.
It was. Yeah, it was just a nice little.
Bring me out of it. Really,
it was just a nice little thing, probably to temper the tone of the movie. Just a little burst of light amongst all that darkness that we were getting thrown at us. The second technique they used, of course, we've just been speaking about, is the digital recreations of characters like Tarkin and Leia. The third technique is my least favourite technique, and one I was very concerned that they were going to use when they were doing certainly Leia, which is to have an approximation of the character that we know and obscure them. And I think that the way they did that with Anakin in the Bacta tank, I felt was so close to deliver that shot of him in that Bacta tank as it starts to drain was so close to delivering. If Hayden was in there, I would have lost my mind.
Even just opening his eyes, like see him opening his eyes or something.
Just to see that would have been fantastic. Just to know that guy had come back and dip back into Star Wars for one shot would have been amazing.
I tell you what, Vader has clearly not been wasting his time, because he was hench.
Yeah.
He looked enormous. It was brilliant.
Yeah, he was buff, wasn't he?
Yeah, he looked proper buff. I was amazed.
And how did that happen? I was thinking that bloke, I know
Sith
he was harmless.
Sith steroids, yeah.
Yeah.
of course.
The final technique for bringing back the characters we touched on previously, which is to recycle footage. I believe that the footage of Gold Leader and Red Leader that was used in this movie was actually from alternate takes that didn't make the cut of A New Hope.
I think I'd be interested to go frame by frame, because I think it's a mix of both.
Yeah, and there's definitely, certainly with Gold Leader, I think I saw an element from A New Hope where he uses the call sign Red 5, which was one of my favourite throwaway gags in this movie.
Yeah, I love that.
Was someone freeing up the call sign Red 5. I thought that was
just
great.
Snuffing it,
it was clear that the filmmakers knew what their options were in this movie, and they used everything. And they used everything to great effect, even if it was the cheat of obscuring Anakin in that Bacta tank. If you'd like to support what we do here at Talk Star Wars, you can do so by becoming a TSW sponsor. For as little as £1 per month, given securely via PayPal, you can help us keep the lights on here at TSW. When you become a TSW sponsor, we will elevate you to VIP status. As a TSW VIP, you'll get access to an exclusive stream that provides you with fun downloads like HD wallpapers for your desktop, tablet and mobile device, ringtones and text alerts courtesy of our very own audio Jedi, at Rob Wade Vision. You'll also receive a monthly newsletter with news about what's going on here at Talk Star Wars. And you'll get a priority release of the new Star Wars audio commentary series called TSW Feature Comms. All this for as little as £1 per month. Head to talkstarwars.co.uk/support and become a TSW sponsor today, and the Force will be with you always.
So yeah, I have one final point on the Tarkin CG.
Yeah, go for it.
Which is that is part of the reason I call the film bold. Is because it would have been very easy to just have him looking out the window the whole scene, not even daring to turn around and talk to Krennic. And, you know, it would have still worked in the storyline capacity, because they don't get along.
Which is what I thought they were going to give us, to be honest.
Yeah. But I'm so glad they turned him around and they actually had him walking around and delivering dialogue.
Me too.
Because that's the only way.
Yeah.
Bold gestures are the only way things get done, you know?
I think maybe I'll get closer. I don't think I'll ever be truly happy with it. Maybe they'll improve it on the Blu-ray, but maybe a second run for me.
Maybe.
I won't be so, oh my God, what have they done? Why doesn't it work? My brain was trying. It wasn't even me. My brain was trying desperately to see 100% Tarkin and get back in the film. And the more I thought about it, the worse it got.
You know the reaction you had to Tarkin, Steve? I had exactly the same reaction on my first viewing to Gold Leader and Red Leader. As soon as those scenes popped up, I thought, oh, why have they done that? That's really
I love
cheap.
That too. And, I loved it.
But the second I was completely on board with it. And I thought, no, this is great. And it really works. And in fact,
and it makes sense.
It's wonderful to see those guys and see that continuity through to the next film. It's
it makes sense. Why would they not be there?
I wouldn't change it, even despite what I've just said. I still, like you say, I still think they made the right move. And I like the fact they tried desperately. I just would love if they improved that for the Blu-ray, no one would be happier. I'll actually buy a Blu-ray.
Wow.
Steve, you just said you wouldn't change it. So that's given me a really interesting question to ask. What about this movie would you change if you could change anything? Paul, let's start with you because you've been very positive so far and I want to try and tease a little dark out of you.
It's really, really hard to know what I would change. I can almost not answer that, but I can tell you what I would like to have seen still, but it looks like the reshoots didn't allow for that. I really wanted to see him running down the beach with a hard drive in their hands.
Yeah.
I wanted to see the stormtroopers knee deep in blue water. Yeah. Stuff. I wanted to go down that avenue. Now I've got to be honest though, as the story rolled along, even waiting for those snippets, I didn't remember not missing them afterwards. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Because they did such a beautiful job of weaving the last 20 minutes of that film together. I seriously, I was like a kid in the candy shop. I just sat there just bubbling and loving and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it's only when I came out, then I did remember what I didn't see. And it was like, oh yeah, didn't see that. Oh, well, never mind, move along sort of thing. Because they did such a good job otherwise. But what I would change, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Very, very quick rewind. Like you say, the Leia CGI wasn't particularly great. And I actually would have been happy. We saw her from behind and she takes it. She didn't have to turn around. Tiny, 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 tiny thing. When she did, fine. Didn't really work for me, but there you go. I didn't care. But I did love the line. And I did actually like the way they actually made the attempt to make that beautiful, seamless approach. I was, but if she hadn't have turned around, I'd have been fine with that as well. But changing anything? No, I enjoyed it too much.
Rob, any changes you would make?
Just as a side thing, just the fact that you're saying this stuff, Paul, makes me so happy. It really, really does. let me think. So, like I say, I wasn't 100% sold on the way Chirrut went out. And I was a little bit disappointed with what we'd been led to believe was going to be like a rage mode for Baze, which ended up just being him going for a walk and shooting stuff, which he'd been doing for the whole film anyway.
Yeah.
I was hoping he'd maybe drop the guns and start swinging and that sort of thing. So I would have maybe done that a little differently. But then at the same time, without bringing... the way I would have done it would have had to rework the whole film because I said in the thing, I wanted Vader to do it because I wanted somebody who'd never really appreciated the Force because he just always had it to use to take out the guy who revered it. Because to me, that was a compelling story, but it couldn't happen that way based on how they did it. And I thought the way they did it was so good that I don't want to change it. So I'm kind of stuck in that respect. I would probably just, I'm kind of with Paul. I would have just had Leia just stay, you know, where she was.
Back to camera.
Yeah, back to camera. Maybe rush that scene a bit more, that last little bit, because it did seem like there wasn't so much urgency once they detached the ships, and there should have been, because they still weren't out of the woods.
Okay. Stephen, if you could change anything in this film.
Well, obviously, I want to see an improvement on Akbar, on Tarkin. I would have loved to have seen what happens. You know, Tarkin's, I don't know if it's a family member. Are they Mon Calamari? Is that what they're called?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing there, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was a Home One ship, right? That's the one he was piloting.
Yeah, I believe so.
That class. I would love to have seen what happened to it after Leia left. And whether it was captured or blown up or what happened, because one of the when I think of that film, the shot I think of is that guy looking down between his legs at the planet below through that glass.
Oh, it was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was
great.
Oh
my god, I would love to have seen a bit more of that. Even more, like Space Wars would have been fantastic. That last scene, the last that half an hour was just f***ing awesome. Excuse my French, bleep time. They're all good swears, Mark.
There are no good swears.
But yeah, I would like, I'd like to see an improved Tarkin. I'd like to see them edit out. I'm sure she says "Emily" instead of "enemy" at one point when she's doing her big speech. Yeah, what's her name now?
Jin. Oh, Felicity Jin. Jones.
You know? Oh, yeah, it's Felicity Jones. When she's doing her massive speech, I'm sure she says "Emily," which really annoyed me.
I thought there was a scene where. When Two Tubes and the extremists get hold of Bodhi Rook at the start, I was pretty sure that someone referred to him as an infector and not a defector. But that's going to be one of those things I look out for.
He's a virus.
If I could change anything about this movie, there's one point that I've been going back and forth with James from Tumbling Saber about the Vader scene.
Yeah, he's...
Vader in the airlock. I so love that scene, and I love to see that guy off his chain like that. But the one thing that I did notice, and I think I mentioned it in my review on the site, is that those plans on that little memory card would be so easy for him to just call with the Force as he's wiping all of these people out. And James pointed that out. It really bugs him.
Did he know they were there, though?
I think...
Wasn't he just working his way through the ship? Well, I don't think he knew they had him in their hands.
That's what I was thinking. That might be a good point. And if that's a lie I can tell myself to get past this, then great. he's definitely in pursuit of something. And you would think that that would be those... plans.
But wasn't that Anakin's downfall all the way through, that he can't get out of the moment and see what really needs doing? He was angry, they were in front of him. That's always been his problem. He never sees the big picture.
That's a pretty valid point, actually, Steve.
That's an excellent point, yeah. That is his downfall. Okay, well, we've been recording, we've had a message from the white side of the Force, Christopher and Stacey White. So I'm just going to read out what Stacey's written there. She's put, greetings, Mark and the TSW crew.
Hello.
This is Stacey White.
Hello.
And here are some of my rambling reactions to Rogue One. There'll be spoilers. All right. That's all right. Yep. We're in a spoiler-filled episode. We let our son skip school to watch Rogue One. How wonderful is it to have a new Star Wars movie?
That's quite education, though, isn't it?
How wonderful is it to have a new Star Wars movie be a part of our family's Christmas tradition? So wonderful. Just a marvellous time to be a Star Wars fan. Couldn't agree more. After the movie, we visited our local comic book store, and I walked in to see a section and saw a K2SO figure. I started crying again. Chris then saw me and brought this figure home. Three standout moments from Stacey. One, Chirrut was exactly what I wanted. Loved every scene he was in. Two, Bodhi's death hit me hard, which was unexpected.
Yep, that's
and
fair.
Three, Vader. Simply Vader. I really enjoyed the characters. I feel conflicted about potentially not seeing them again in movies. That feels like such a shame. I thought that as well. That's something that when Cassian and Jin left, I thought it was a bit of a pity. The movie had a few odd beats to it, indeed. I am emotionally exhausted, cried out, not sure that is a feeling I want to have from my Star Wars movie. May the Force be with you always. I think that there's some catharsis at the end of this film, and maybe after a couple more viewings, when it's like I said about The Force Awakens last year, we had to get used to watching a new film, a film we didn't know how it ended.
Yeah.
A film that was the first act of a trilogy, so there is no resolution. We have to learn to watch that film. With this film, you get all three acts. I think we have to learn to take the bitter and the sweet together here. Maybe that exhaustion isn't what you're looking for in a Star Wars movie, but it does end poignantly with a lot of hope. I think that's great. So thanks for that message, Stacey. I'm glad you seem to enjoy the movie.
It's important to have those down up moments, though, because it shows how much things meant to you.
Yeah, for sure.
In a nutshell. Well, K2SO. Say again?
It gives it a lot of weight, doesn't it?
Yeah. But at the same time, you might even remember something you weren't aware of. It's like, K2SO, as we were trundling along, I was growing a little more fond of him. But at the end, it's like, oh, man, what?
That took me by surprise.
You kind of knew everyone was going to die at that point.
When they take down that one, yeah.
Yeah, it starts to like...
When they take light out of
here we go.
I think we're all on the same page with Vader. I thought his scenes were fantastic.
Oh, I loved it.
That one on the fiery planet, which I can't
Mustafar.
I thought that was insightful. But I tell you, the only thing I wanted to ask Cannon and Ball here, is that, and that's you, Rob Cannon.
Oh, okay.
Is that didn't his were his eyes burgundy? Or was that why aren't they black?
No. The lenses.
Yeah.
Not in the New Hope. No, they were amber.
Right.
So they've been.
Never seen that before.
Very, very diligent about recreating. That's why they brought Brian Muir back.
Yes.
They very, very diligently recreated the exact costume from the original movie. Right down to the tabards being over the shoulder armour. What do we make of his castle on Mustafar then?
That was awesome.
You got the castle on Mustafar, the Bacta tank.
Yep.
We know now who the guy kneeling is. We know that Vader's got Imperial guards of his own. So what did we make of that whole scene? Did that work?
Up until one really final point. Up until the last line he delivered, which was a pun.
Yeah.
And it didn't, you know, it didn't kind of jar too much because, you know, Darth Vader has a sort of dark sense of humor. Obviously, the apology accepted Captain Nida line from Empire Strikes Back. But it just, it took me out of it for a brief second. I was just like, what? No, hang on. And then I kind of, as, you know, it bothered me less as the film went on.
Did you notice, I think there may have been something in there, Rob, that will give you, that will reframe that moment for you slightly.
Okay.
Did you notice Krennic's reaction? As Vader walked away.
Yeah,
he was almost smirking, wasn't he? Mm.
So what does that tell you? Because to me, I read that as, well, I've got Vader on side.
Yeah, he thought that was the case.
That's why I took it. Yeah. So that
he thought the power game was going in his direction again.
Yes, because I think he would see that was a reveal to him that Tarkin and Vader are not aligned in any way here. And he can draw on Vader as a resource. And an ally.
It's also possible that maybe Vader, with his other hand, was just giving him a more familiar handshake, kind of.
Yeah.
While we're on the subject, can I throw something out there about Krennic?
Yes, please do. Yeah.
And upset Rob.
Like I was thinking about how he died like a bit of a bitch.
Right.
Very like there was nothing to that scene. Very
I thought
thorough,
that was brilliant.
But no, all the characters died like that, so that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there scope that he actually survived and got right? They something picked him up last minute.
No, I doubt it.
And I'll tell you why.
Rob, you'll probably back me up on this one. This pays off on Catalyst completely.
Yes, yes.
Because in that book, you definitely see the competition between Krennic and Tarkin.
Yep.
And that extends into this movie. Mm-hmm. You can see sort of Tarkin maneuvers. He plays events so that he can take control of the Death Star project. And that doesn't sit well with Krennic. And I think that whole Krennic's demise, he realizes at that point that Tarkin's pulled the trigger and he's lost.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Yeah, that's why I liked it.
His own weapon and killed by the guy. Who happens to be rattling that particular saber at that moment.
Yes, agreed. I loved Krennic. I thought he was, I thought my kind of man crush was entirely justified based on the movie. He was awesome in that, Ben Mendelsohn.
Yeah.
He had a really good subtlety about him as well. As much as he was forceful, he was really, really cool. And he was, it's hard to describe. He was
so brash.
Delicately hard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, yeah. He's
very good.
He's
like a dangerous
steel.
Feather.
feather with razor blades on the end. The line on Lemu when he confronts Galen, and Galen says, "I've been, it's been lonely here since Lyra died," and he was, my condolences. Oh, look, he's back from the dead. I thought that was
great. I love that. That was great.
That was so great, as if he wasn't taken off guard at all.
Yeah.
The scene that seemed to have been taken out of that in reshoots was the burning of the homestead as well. There was a shot there, wasn't there? The death troopers.
You saw the trooper pick up the doll, and then you didn't see what was behind them. Basically, you just kind of saw the hand.
Yeah.
They reframed that.
Okay. I want us to get to sort of rankings and standout moments, but I'm going to wait. I'll pause back. I know you stepped away for a sec there, Paul, didn't you? All right, so let's start to wrap this up then. We've done We've done a bit of a overview of... we're going to be talking about this film for months, clearly. And when we open it up to listeners, I'm sure that we're going to have much more to think about, much more to talk about. But let's just do a round of favourite moments. What did you take away from this movie that will stay with you more than anything else? Paul, can we start with you?
So much, actually. I've become a complete living contradiction of everything, all my fears, hopes, and goodness knows what. I said to you, I was like really keen to let's go back to the good old-fashioned Star Wars space battle, and I wanted it to be simplistic and so on. But I stared at that in awe, the whole bit with the gate. And this is what Steve was alluding to earlier. I loved the bit where the X-Wing hit the gate, and rather than they talk about vaporize and you're going to go into a black void, this poor guy goes skidding across on bad ice skates.
Like ice. It was so good.
That is so cool.
That was amazing.
And then the bit is like, let's call up a blockade runner or whatever he called it. And it's like, what?
The hammerhead.
Yeah, and I go, what? Oh, that's so... man, what are they doing? sort of thing. And then we've seen the whole Death Star... not Death Star. We've seen the Star Destroyer situation before. Mm-hmm. And I've never been a fan of the way they sink in space. Things don't really sink in space. Not really. But the way they maneuvered this guy into the other one and they ripped the gate apart, I was just like, that's so cool. And by that point, I was almost wetting myself anyway. So
that was great.
Seriously, Mark, so many high points. When they hit Jeddah, that slow tsunami of rock.
Tsunami of rock is a good way of putting it.
That coming towards them was great.
And Krennic's reaction.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And he meant it.
That is a bad guy. He's just a bad guy.
He really meant it, sort of thing.
Rob, that's a bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rob. Yeah. Anyway, Rob, you lose. again, little bits. It's like the way we lost people. I said I didn't want long dragged out bits, and they didn't drag it out too much.
No, that's
like,
true.
I said this is war, you know. So in the real battlefield, soldiers don't really get much time to say goodbye, and they probably want to, and so on and so forth. And you know, but I've not been a soldier. I don't know the truth, but I get that feeling sometimes. That's the case. So with some of the situations, it was an abrupt ending for them, and I appreciated it, and I took it on board for that because I was like, this is a war sort of thing. But you know, the two of them sitting sort of casually on the beach watching the sunset. Oh, and by the way, we're going to be obliterated in a few minutes. That was extremely touching, and I thought it was a beautiful farewell, and also kind of a hell of a way to put a finger up, if you like, given the bird.
Yeah, no argument there.
It's like, regardless of what is happening to us now, we've done something for the good. Everything's going to be fine. And they've even got a little subtle smile on their faces, sort of thing, as they stare at this thing coming in. And I was completely overwhelmed at that point, to be honest.
Good call. Yeah.
I just thought about one little bugbear, one question I asked as we left the cinema. The opening scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why did they park so far away from the house?
I wondered if maybe... I wish they'd explained it in dialogue, because I have a feeling that there's some reason...
Is it something to do with the moisture farmer? I don't know. But
I don't know whether he's doing some... Because he's probably doing some energy research still, so maybe he's set up some sort of... You know...
Maybe they need to set... Maybe they need...
Fancy the walk.
there is the case that it just looks cool.
Been in space for ages. Yeah.
But it gave them time. It gave the troops time to fan out and get a really good idea of what they were walking into. And if they'd landed just on the doorstep, they could have been caught in a crossfire. So there's probably tic-tacs to it, but I like the idea that they did
We've
just because
We've heard Vader say that
cool.
before, haven't we? You came out of hyperspace too early or...
Too close to the system,
too close to the... Yeah, and so...
Rob,
anyway, yeah...
Your takeaways from this movie, mate. Your main takeaway.
If the future of Star Wars stories is to this standard, I'm on board 100%, and they can try as much as they can do as much as they want, and I'm on board for whatever they want to try. This film was bold. It was different. It was new but familiar. Everything I was hoping for, we got in spades. It was awesome.
Brilliant. So you're now behind the spin-off idea completely.
I was anyway, but I'm doubly behind it now.
I think that's what apart from being a good standalone film, that's what this thing had to do. That was its job. It was to set its stall out and sell us on this whole prospect of a Star Wars story.
As I said, as much as this is a standalone film, it weaves in beautifully, and totally. It is almost part of the saga, mate, to be honest.
It is
part of the saga.
Well, I've seen people saying that it's 3.5. Steve, you've been saying...
I called it 3.9, didn't I?
3.9 is a good word for it.
Steve's been calling it 3.5 for, ever since it was announced, and it does work like that. And I think that even with the Han Solo film, even it is much more removed. I think there will still be a lot of this stuff where we'll see the tendrils of the Skywalker saga as they wriggle through the story, because the Empire is still going to be a fixture. It's going to be, this is the landscape that we're in. So instead of this being the story we're being told, it's the landscape that we're in as the other stories are being told. And I welcome that, like you, Rob. Sorry, go on, Rob.
Yeah. Now, I have a question on that. Do you think that this, we were talking about how we didn't think it was going to do as well as Force Awakens because there's not as much hype around it. Do you think that will change once word gets out that it's really, 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 really good?
Yes.
I think that actually people, I mean, I was kind of thinking to myself, I mean, I saw Force Awakens at the cinema 4 times at the end.
Yeah.
And I actually probably burned myself out, if I'm honest, on the first, because I saw them all in the first week.
Oh, yeah, that's a bit too much, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if I'm now more likely to go and see Rogue One more because it surprised me so pleasantly in terms of just how good it was.
Yes. And you are a fan, and I think that's probably true for me as well. But for the casual moviegoer, I think they will definitely pay attention to this. They'll definitely pay attention to the reaction. And I said last week I felt that we were probably looking at a $200 million opening weekend. I think now that might be a bit conservative. And that was a reaction to the conservative predictions that it might only do 130. I think that...
It was 33 in the first day, wasn't
it's
it?
It's done 33 and it's set a record.
Was that on the preview day, actually? 33
on the preview day. Set a record for preview days. And it looks like it's on for top 15 for opening weekend with where it is at the moment. So I've put a widget on the site that will keep track of the... On the Rogue One page, it will keep track of the box office. But I wouldn't... I feel quite comfortable with the $200 million opening weekend prediction, but that may be a little bit conservative.
I think it's a slow burner, personally. Mm. I think this one will linger for longer. I don't think it's going to have the same kind of explosive appeal of Force Awakens, but I think it's going to be a slow burn. I think it's going to do very, very well. Maybe not to the same degree as Force Awakens, but I actually don't think it's going to be as far-fetched for it to kind of run up along. I think it'll probably hit a billion.
Well, it's going to take the Asian markets in a way that The Force Awakens didn't, because of Donnie Yen and Zhang Wen's presence. It will do money
that's
in the Asian markets.
That's true. That's very true.
Anyway, we've gotten sidetracked. Steve, your main takeaway from this movie, mate?
Sounds shallow, but the Space Gate battle. When I get this film, I'm going to fast forward it to the last half hour, just watch that first, and then watch it all again.
I do watch a lot of films. I go back and rewatch certain scenes from films, so I do understand.
Yeah, that battle was just perfect. The all the different X-Wings and the Blue Squadron and the detail with the ships and the home ships and the Mon Calamari character, just fantastic.
Mm.
Loved it. And it weaved in perfectly with the land battle below, and you could see both. Like, that's what I loved. You're looking through the gate onto the land battle below.
It's very much like Jedi, isn't it, in that respect?
Yeah, definitely.
My takeaways from this film are, I'm also going to sneak in a little retraction. A little while ago, I made some remarks about the story group and how I felt that they failed to deliver by tying all of these disparate elements together through comic books, movies, games and TV shows and everything. This film proves that I was wrong. This film does a great job of pulling everything together. It pulled story elements in from Tarkin. It pulled story elements in from Catalyst. It did a great job at nodding at the Star Wars Rebels TV show. Gave us some really exciting and enjoyable cameos in there. 3 wonderful Easter eggs that are all Rebel-shaped. And it really paid close attention to what it needed to honour about A New Hope and what it could slightly recontextualise about A New Hope. It was first class, and it sold me completely on what the story group are doing.
Mm.
For me, that attention to detail gives me great faith in what they're going to do going forward. I'm extremely excited about what's coming next.
Yeah.
This film just works. So let's wrap this episode up by going around and ranking this film, and then we'll do final thoughts. Paul, we know, but for the record,
you want to score?
Your rank?
100.
Whatever you want to do, score it. If you want to throw arbitrary points out, if you want to score it in kittens or just place it in a stack rank, it's up to you, mate.
To be honest, it was everything I'd hoped and a lot more. And I couldn't be happier. And I'd like to thank them for undercharging me.
That was great. Last time you said you want to feel like you stole from them, that was that's a great way of looking at this. Mm. Rob?
I had a beautiful, beautiful evening.
Well, you were with Steve, so of course that's going to help.
Exactly.
He was dressed, though, which was made a pleasant change as well.
Unusual.
If they did naked movie nights, I would go.
It's always something we can start at TSW HQ. We'll just do it when I'm off. Rob, if you were to rank this film?
I don't know about the numbers. I haven't really thought about it. But, it's excellent. It's already in the top half of my estimations of Star Wars movies, and I'm probably going to see it again in a few hours.
Oh, cool. That is awesome.
It's been kind of materializing while we've been talking, actually.
Brilliant.
I think it's excellent. I think, like I say, I'm on board for everything they want to do with taking risks and trying things to see what sticks. I will happily watch anything they produce, and, I have high hopes for the future of the Star Wars story standalones.
Great stuff. Stephen, you can read this however you want.
Seeing as Empire is a solid 9 out of 10, and I like this as much as Empire, and possibly will like it more the second time and onwards from there when you build a relationship with the story, I've got to put it on a par with that, 9 out of 10.
Perfect.
All right. Nice.
When I left, I made a sly little in-joke when I left my first screen, and I said that this was SW0608 out of Rogue One. Because I don't like to stack rank, but I do like to give little insider hints. I don't know what that call sign was all about yet, but I like it. This is my third favourite Star Wars film. This has rocketed up to sit just under The Empire Strikes Back. I think this is close to perfect. And if I didn't have such emotional ties to A New Hope and Empire, this might become
We've all got that problem. Favorite. That's why we're really having trouble judging this.
Yeah. So, I am so in love with it. And I want to take my lead from you, actually, Paul. And I'd just like to thank Gareth Edwards for delivering such a solid movie. And in amongst a storm of criticism around reshoots and everything people were questioning about this guy's ability, he's managed to laser focus on this thing and deliver an incredible film, let alone an incredible Star Wars film. This is an incredible film. 98% perfect.
2% terrible.
not terrible. Tarkin. 2% if that Tarkin thing wasn't being met with such dubious
skepticism.
Criticism. And if the Leia thing had been a little bit more reliable, I would have given it 100%, I think. I would have said it was 10 out of 10 perfect, but there's always going to be something. And maybe that little thing with the Vader getting that memory stick. I don't know, but it's close to it. Paul, you just mentioned about the reshoots. Are we going to do should we do a separate pod about the reshoots?
Yeah.
When we've had a chance to do a bit of research into
that was kind of a reactionary question based on the last 5 minutes, and I'll go into more depth on that offline.
Okay. All right, then. Well, let's wrap this up then. So, thank you very much for listening to this Rogue One reaction episode of Talk Star Wars. If you'd like to leave us a review, then head to iTunes. If you give us a 5-star review, we'll Ron Burgundy that thing and read whatever you write in there as long as it's clean. Don't forget you can check out our podcasting partners over on the network by going to starwarscommonwealth.com. You'll find Tumbling Saber, Generation X-Wing, Rogue Squadron podcast, the Skyhoppers podcast, and now the new kids on the block, our brand new show that Kyle announced on Tumbling Saber this week, The Nerd Room. They've just joined the family. And there's something else coming, but we'll give that due respect next week, I think. Gentlemen, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, I'm on Wild About Nature, but I'm relatively quiet at the moment because everything's pretty dead outside. But
That's a spirit.
YouTube.
Always so sunny.
Dead is the operative word, but it tends to do that in winter. Although I did see two blue tits mating the other day. Which scared the pants. If I hadn't had my pants off already, they would have been scared off me.
Now I'm not sure what in amongst all of that stuff I need to beep. That's left me scared and confused.
Well, blue tits are birds. There's no rude word there. They were mating in the wrong month, about four months early, which is fairly
They have absolute mating rights.
Well, but if I was...
No one tells you when to do it.
I don't mate out of season.
To be fair, Paul, I didn't send
on your anniversary.
Right, in amongst all that carnage was Steve's call out to his own social platform, World About Nature on YouTube. You can find him at Stephen underscore Ware on Twitter, or if you search Wild About Nature, you'll find him there. Goodness me. Paul, where can people find you on the internet?
You'll find me on Twitter at MovieScore News, and you'll find me on the interweb, moviescorenews.com, and you'll find me at Talk Star Wars called Paul.
Rob, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rob Wade Vision. You can also find my blog, Emotionally14, emotionally14.com. That's digits, not letters. And it's got associated Twitter at Emotionally14, YouTube, Facebook, podcasts, unboxings, the works.
Perfect.
Can't go wrong.
You'll find everything I do at talkstarwars.co.uk, and I'm on Twitter at TalkStarWars. If you want to send us questions or comments, you can do so by emailing them to talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. It's talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. You can iMessage us there as well. We will be back. I think we'll be back before Christmas, depending on our recording schedule. We've got to work that out. Maybe you'll get something on Boxing Day. And by the silence I'm met with, we're going to have to really try and work our schedules out. All right. We will see you guys next time, whenever that is.
Cheers, guys.
Be good to each other.
It's a wrap.
I've now started a third recording, so if you want to start rambling about other weird now's probably the time. No swearing, Steve.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Thank you. Yeah, only because I'm upstairs and might get a bit late.
What was that?
Oh, I blew a bit of cat hair off the mic.
Okay, we ready then?
Yep.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Talk Star Wars. I'm Mark.
Steve, back to you, mate. I'm Rob.
Back on form then.
Don't do it again, Mark. Go again. Sorry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome.
I missed it. I tried to hit mute. I missed.